Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minig. I am the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Susan Nicholas, who is a former physician and surgeon who, after a conscious awakening in 2012, transitioned into a life of healing the soul. Now, Susan identifies as a telepathic medical intuitive and energy healer. She is a three-time author and international speaker on life transformation. Her signature talk is the frequency of money. She also helps out individuals heal their relationships with money in order to live a worry-free life. Susan is also the author of three books, The Duality of Being, The Death of Cupcake, and Two Parts of Me. All right, now let's begin the show. Thanks for being on my podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, the feeling is mutual. Thank you so much for having me, truly. So,
yeah, absolutely. Usually I start with like a little intro bio question. I won't go too far back, but obviously you're a medical doctor. I see that on your resume. What initially, again, I know we kind of hop around in fields a lot, and what initially wanted you to become a medical doctor just to begin?
You know, that started for me when I was about 10 years old. Wow. It's kind of interesting because it came out of a terrifying experience where when I was 10 years old, the movie, The Elephant Man, I don't know if you've ever heard of that movie.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was inappropriate for someone my age, but mm-hmm. my parents allowed me to watch it for some reason. Like, it was a time in my life where everything that we watched on television, we had to have approved by our parents. Uh-huh. And, you know, we could only watch like 30 minutes of television a day, you know, like after our schoolwork and after mm-hmm. our dinner and after our bath. If there was any time left, we could have a little bit of TV. But this movie came on, and I don't know what it was about it. Maybe it was the title. I didn't know what it meant.
Is it a scary movie? It seems like a scary movie.
It isn't, but it's heavy. Like, okay, it's about a man that has a severe disease, a deforming disease.
It's called
neurofibromatosis. Yes, and it's
okay.
Black
I've
and
seen
white.
Bits and pieces of it. Okay, now I remember.
And then there was a book. It may have been adapted from a book. And I remember in my fourth grade class, one of my classmates had a book on his desk. And every time I would pass by his desk, I would have this overwhelming feeling of like disgust, like, mm-hmm. oh, you know. And I've had nightmares about seeing that movie. But the only thing that was redeeming about it, in my view at that time, was that there was a compassionate doctor who befriended this very deformed man. And I tell you, even as a 10-year-old child, I could see that the rest of humanity, everybody else surrounding him, was just so disgusting and so mm-hmm. abusive to this person. And that, I believe, is what disgusted me the most, like how he was treated.
Yes.
And then I saw that there was like one compassionate person that saw beyond the deformity and cared for this man to the end of his life. And it was a true story, mm-hmm. based on a true story. And so I declared at that time that if I was going to be anyone in society, I was going to be the doctor. I was going to be the compassionate person that cared for people that didn't abuse people and treat them horribly. And so, I mean, that really dictated the next couple decades of my life.
Yeah. Well, I see that you're a surgeon too.
Yes, I trained as a general surgeon and then did fellowship training in cardiothoracic surgery. I don't practice any longer, but that was my first career.
And did the surgery aspect of it also motivate you? Like, okay, you're like fixing parts of the human body, you're fixing the man's face, you know, something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think by that time as a young woman in my, you know, late 20s, early 30s, you know, coming into my, you know, finishing medical school and in my surgical training, I think I was more fascinated. It came about that there's like this the vision that medical doctors make if they're going to be medical doctors or surgeons, and a medical doctor being someone that doesn't operate versus someone that does operate. And I remember just being so fascinated with the human form and really wanting to kind of get into the body and like discover it. And I really liked gross anatomy as a medical student. And so it seemed like that was a natural progression. I think what was motivating me very early on to go into medicine, by that time, there were other things that were impacting my choices as to a specialty. Mm-hmm. And so I became a surgeon. I went into a surgeon's training. Yeah.
Which not everyone can, because even in med school, you need to get, there's like this test you take your second or third year of med school. It's called the, what is it called?
Are you talking about the USMLE, the medical yes. licensing test?
That helps with residency, correct?
I would say that it doesn't matter. As long as you pass, you can go into any specialty that you want. Like it's not a test that directs you in one direction or another. Not as far as my understanding of it. I mean, it's about getting your license to actually practice medicine, mm-hmm. whatever specialty that you choose. Okay. Yeah.
Well, excellent. Now, and I also say MBA. So did something happen along the way when you were a surgeon that maybe you lost a little passion towards something, or you just weren't feeling something, right?
So that's very perceptive. You know, it wasn't a loss of passion, but I feel like it, as I was getting to the end of my medical, my surgical training, I believe that I would feel happy, that I would feel fulfilled and actualized. But it turned out that every year that went by, I had this deepening like feeling that something's wrong. Mm. And on paper, it wouldn't make sense to anyone. It was very difficult. There was this disconnect and this conflict between what I was feeling inside and what things were looking like on the outside. Mm-hmm. It was looking like I made it, like I got through this very difficult and challenging career path. But inside I felt empty, like a soulful emptiness. Mm-hmm. And I would consider myself at that time a very just sad person. I would say functionally depressed. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't understand. I didn't have any language surrounding that, Jacob. And the pain became so deep that I believe that if I had done all this work and if I had achieved this extraordinary goal, like beyond what I had set out to do, I achieved more than I could have even imagined as a 10-year-old girl saying, oh, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a compassionate yep. doctor. But if that couldn't fulfill me, then what could? I literally believed that I was in my purpose. And if that wasn't mm-hmm. filling the void, then what could possibly do that?
Well, like you said, on paper, it looks amazing and everything, but I'm sure maybe you get the people out there that shame people like you're like, you know how many people would kill to be in your situation?
Right.
You know how many people didn't get into med school and want to be a surgeon, and you have the opportunity now. And
you throw it away or you don't take it or fulfill it. Trust me, I put myself through that.
Here's
as
my
well.
Challenge towards that, though, and the same goes for like NFL players too. Like NFL players with high levels of talent. Okay, well, whose right is it to throw it away? Is it up to me or is it up to you? No, whose talent is it? It's my talent to do with what I want. With
you know, and I would say throwing it away isn't justice, because there are many. Even though I don't operate like open the body physically, mm-hmm. That experience informs a lot of what I do in my healing practice today. Yeah. I just do it in a spiritual way. I like literally get to the soul of it, because in surgery, what we would do is we would cut out disease.
Yeah.
And that is, I even recall in general surgery thinking that we weren't getting to the root of the problem. You know, okay. Like we never learned how to get to the root of the problem, like medicating it, numbing it, cutting it out. That was a manifestation of something deeper.
Yeah.
And we never addressed it. We never gave any credence to the soul or the spirit of us, the energetic essence of us in allopathic medicine. It was all about the physical experience, the physical exam, the physical interpretation. And anything else was actually, I believe, neglected and not even acknowledged. And so I feel like now with like the experience with the anatomy and the experience of practicing healing, you know, we thought, well, let me put it this way. I thought that I was in the healing arts, you know, and I didn't feel like we were healing anybody. Like, you know, it wasn't.
Well, there's different aspects of healing. There's like the physical, the spiritual.
Right. Emotional,
the light,
mental.
Which we can get into later. Yeah. The light body. And
exactly. And I think I would say my contract, like why I'm here, wasn't necessarily in the physical. Like it wasn't about cutting disease out, but it was healing the root of the disease.
Okay.
And I wasn't finding that in clinical medicine.
Did you say contract?
Yeah, like my
elaborate
soul contract.
Okay, bingo. So, awesome.
So I didn't have any language around this when I was doing my secular work, when I was doing medicine, even when I went to business school and I was doing, you know, raising up a healthcare company and being a healthcare yep. equity investor. Trust me, like none of this was online for me yet.
Tell me your perception of the contract and I'll tell you mine.
So I believe that we make an agreement of sorts on the other side of the veil, on the other side of life, before we take an embodiment.
Would you say heaven, maybe, or the home, as some spirits say, or?
I don't think about it as heaven. That's just where I am. I've let go of kind of religious ideology. Mm-hmm. But I believe that there is let me put it this way. I think there's a vibration, like a frequency. There's a place where we are in harmony with ourselves, with our inner selves. And that is a dimensional space, just not as physical as this one, not as dense in ideology and form as this one. Okay. And I think when we are in that spirit or that energetic state of being, let's say in our essence of being, we have pure consciousness. And that conscious part of us, that life energy or that life force of us, has awareness. And this is my understanding from my out-of-body experiences about coming into life here, coming into embodiments on Earth, is that we are first spirit or first energy, we're yep. whatever you want to call it. We're first a soul, we're first an energetic seed of consciousness. And we elect to take on embodiments to mature our soul, like to mature mm-hmm. that spirit of ours. So we can eventually return to our creator, or return home, if whatever you want to call that. And so I think there's this source of all creation that at some point in our very long, you know, I believe we're born into the universe for a very long time, but mm-hmm. at some point we get to return back, maybe come full circle, if you will, want to think of it that way. Mm-hmm. But along the way, we take on embodiments or we accept embodiments. And I believe that there's contracts. When I say contracts, like in the Akashic records, like, what are you here to do? Like, why are you taking this embodiment at this time and space on this planet? What are you going to do? What is it that you are to, like, to, what's the point of it?
Could you think of this as being maybe Earth school or school, in a sense, for the spirit?
I call Earth 3.0 the cosmic kindergarten.
Okay, yep, yep, okay.
Yeah. Sure. And actually, my very first blog before I wrote The Duality of Being was called Earth School 101.
Oh, wow, okay.
I wrote it on one of those very early blog apps. You know, I used to write all my little thoughts on there. And I was like, yeah, this is a cosmic kindergarten. You know, like we're just learning, we're overcoming very dense thoughts, like and energies, like fear. You know, I think a lot of us are born into this embodiment to overcome fears. And fear is a very dense energy, like vibrationally speaking. Guilt, greed, you know, judgment, pride, all those, we have names for all these feelings that are emanating from us. And that's what we're here to do, to transmute those energies into higher vibrational frequencies. And so that's definitely what I've come to understand about that contract, is that we decide what perhaps in a prior existence wasn't complete. Where were we not complete? What energies were still or are being passed on? We can see it even in this physical life, in our legacy, in our generations, like stuff that is not dealt with, and secrets and unspeakableness and energies that are passed on and carried on and carried on and carried on. And so just imagine beyond the living, like beyond the current living people, like how long that thread might be.
Yeah.
And so I believe that we come into this embodiment with, yes, with physical stuff to do, because we are in a physical world and there are properties of living in the embodiment. So we have to know how to be here, how to be in the embodiment, how to protect the embodiment, how to care for the embodiment. But we're also here to mature our eternal soul. And I think that's what is missed. I think that is the elephant in the room, is that all the focus is on the external journey, like on the physical work. Mm-hmm. And I was like that, you know, it was all about what was outside of me. And I think what I came to realize is that when I did all my physical work and I reached the height of my physical worldly success, what was left to do was the inner work. Okay. And that took me on the journey within, which is what I've been doing for the past decade or more now.
Do you think that's like most people, is that they have that physical journey at first and then they go into the spiritual?
I think so. I believe that's what I think. I definitely have met young people who, I guess I want to say, were awakened as children, but I think they're few and far in between. I was awakened like when I was 40, mm-hmm. like the typical, what people call a midlife crisis. And I think many people, when they do wake up, they wake up a little bit later, like when they figure out all that stuff didn't bring them fulfillment, happiness, actualization. And then they begin to take the inner journey if they dare.
Okay. Now, you said your journey, in a sense, in the book started in 2012, right? Is when you're going through the type of depression or a low mood in your life?
That was my second bout with the deep depression and the low mood. But 40 was the time that I began. It was 2012. I began to leap out of my body.
Okay. Yep.
And have multidimensional experiences. And I thought I was about, I thought that was my death. Like I was dying, and I had an overwhelming sense of calm about it, despite having a 2-year-old child, a 2.5-year-old child at the time. I felt strangely at peace about this experience of leaving. Mm-hmm. I felt so free, like incredibly free. And I was like, okay, this must be what happens when you're about to die. I'm just experiencing it now and I'm ready to go.
And this just happened one random night when you're laying down in bed or whatever, and that happened?
The first one, it seems random, but I don't know if anything's random, but I was traveling like that, like out of self for 7 years. And so I realized that, I wasn't dying. In fact, the more I went out and the more I came back, the better and healthier I felt in my body. I felt like I got like 10 years of my youth back. You know, I feel better at 50, which I am now, than I did when I was 30. I just feel well in myself, because in the process of leaving out and I would say awakening my intuition, awakening our superpowers, like I began to see and move energy, I had to be well in myself to be able to hold those frequencies, to be able to channel energy. So it's like, I didn't, not that I was a big drinker, but I didn't drink anymore. I never did drugs, but I got clean. I got cleaned up. I wasn't drinking, artificial stuff and colors. And, you know, I went vegan for a while and, now embrace a primary plant-based diet with very few meats, like chicken or fish, but no, like I cut out a lot of stuff. Nice. And for me, that's what I need to be able to move energy. So when I do, in surgery, I could be all junked up, you know, I could have had a Coke and a candy bar before I went to the operating room. But to move energy, I have to be well inside to be able, I believe, to be a conduit for that high frequency light energy for my true, my soul healing work.
Okay. So I noticed, like, when you said you go out and about with the out of your body and everything, and that there's particular dimensions. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. So the physical earth realm is dimension three?
Well, I think that's what we've called it. We say that we're in the third or 3D, like the 3D environment. I mean, I didn't call it that. That's just the how we call Earth. Like, it's a third dimensional Earth environment.
Okay.
But I know that there are different or higher dimensional spaces that we can assume, you know, and higher dimensional embodiments that we can take. And so like Earth is not the end all be all of existence. There's a multitude of existences, and this is just one. Now I will concede that having, like, coming to Earth in the embodiment is a privilege. I mean, it is quite extraordinary. And it, as far as kindergarten goes, it's one of the best, because the lessons are pretty tough and you have to learn them. Like, you don't get to skip anything. Yeah. You have to not go around. You can't drug yourself, numb yourself, distract yourself. You have to go through all of it. And so it's a treacherous training ground, but it's a lower dimension. There are lower dimensions than Earth. There are existence of even denser ideology and form than this one. But this one is, this Earth environment is quite challenging, and no one, there's no embodied soul that comes into this life for free, where they just coast through the whole thing. Okay. Everyone is here for a reason.
Okay. Cause I noticed in your book too, right? So we kind of talk about, like, the fear of dying and the fear of death. And no, correct me if I'm wrong, but do you mention more in the book where the more afraid you are, the more denser you become?
Right? Yes, I do. I do. Because fear is a very dense energy. And I would say when you can release fear, particularly fear of death, then you are free. Because what is it that we're afraid of, right? At the very end of it, we're afraid of death. So if it's, I fear that I don't have enough money, like, what's at the root of that? It's fear of death. Like, I'm going to starve to death, or I'm going to be homeless, or I'm going to be exposed to the elements, or something's going to happen. And it's like, I'm going to die.
I think it's also more just like, a lot of people just don't know what's going to happen. Because if you want to even go back to the religious aspect of it, is there a heaven or a hell, or what's going to happen when I die? Where am I going to go? Like, I feel like people still battle with that even prior to their deathbed.
Exactly. And I think what you're speaking of, Jacob, is the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. We fear our future because it's unknown to us. And so we fear the transition, like the transition out of body, because we don't know what is next. And so I think I get it. I get it. But once you can release that and know that, so this is what it all boils down to in my understanding of it all, is that we are energy at our core. Mm-hmm. And if we understand the very basic tenets of energy, even on this planet, we know that energy is conserved. It is not created nor destroyed by us, but it is conserved. It changes state. It is transformed. Energy transforms. And so if I recognize that at the very core of me is energy, mm-hmm. that even when this physical goes away, I still be. In fact, I am highly conscious and aware when I'm out of form. Mm-hmm. And I feel so free when I'm out of form, like limitless, infinite, with an awareness of all the connectedness of it all, that I feel like this is a heavy place to be. Mm-hmm. Like, and I feel like when we are in a space, like in a vibrational space, a spiritual space, to release the body and say, this is almost like a costume I'm wearing. Mm-hmm. And when I shed this skin, I'm just going to perhaps take on wear another costume. People call it the meat suit or whatever. It's fantastic. It's amazing, these bodies that we have on this earth. And they're very revered outside of this dimension. They're like, you have an embodiment. Like, you care for that. That's pretty amazing. The body's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And so it's not to marginalize the physical embodiment, but it's also to say that this isn't it. This is one of many that I've taken. And I believe that when we are born into this earth, we catch a very extraordinary case of amnesia, where we forget where we came from, that we had another existence. And I think that's part of the contract of coming here, because if we knew all of it, like if we were like, okay, yeah, I'm here to do this, 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 and that, I think it would take all the wonder out of this life. You know, if you knew that your first love was going to be disastrous in your view, you may not have that first love, right? And so you have to have all those amazing experiences. And so we don't recognize that we've been here before, and that we've done this stuff before, that we've taken embodiments before, that we've transitioned out of embodiments before. And so when we come into awareness of that, it's like, well, what am I afraid of? You know, what is there to be afraid of? And so I'll say this, you know, when it comes to about the death stuff, I have no fear of releasing the embodiment. But of course, there's nobody on earth that wants to have a very painful, prolonged death, you know, and pain of the body. I mean, the body in its own right has pain, you know, has sensations. And so like nobody wants that, you know, so, and I don't either, but I know that that's temporary. Mm-hmm. Whatever should happen, whenever I make my transition, whatever that looks like, it's temporary. And that releasing this is the freeing part. Releasing this embodiment is what sets us free.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because again, these are topics I've always been really passionate and interested about. I was listening to this one podcast, I forgot what it's called, but it's about this one episode is about this guy who had a brother-in-law who he thought he was great. He loved his brother-in-law, but then his brother-in-law had like stage 4 cancer and was going to die soon. So he started like interviewing his brother-in-law about like just his last weeks of life. And the brother-in-law started saying things like, yeah, for some reason I could see like these spirits of my past, of like my grandma and my cat. And he's like, I hated my cat too. I don't even like my cat, but I see my dead cat running around. And then this one night, the brother-in-law said, like when he was sleeping, something wanted to get out of him, like something came out of his physical body, mm-hmm. but then eventually came back to the physical body. It was clinging back to the physical body right prior before his death. So I thought that I found that to be very interesting, how something wanted to get out of his body, mm-hmm. His very sick body.
Right. I think the pain of physical death is in the holding on to it. Okay. And that when we are aware enough and we are able to let go, then we become free. And so I believe that when it is my time, I will freely detach from this form, as amazing as it has been to be in this embodiment. And I've been given a very strong, healthy body in this environment. And I'm very grateful for the embodiment that I have. But when it is time to let her go, I will freely detach from her. I have already detached from her. that I feel like in many ways I've died 1,000 times already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know how incredibly free it is to not carry the weight of this embodiment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm not trying to get sidetracked, but this is what I've always been very, very interested in. So again, not really going with the concept of heaven and hell, but let's say someone didn't really fulfill their contract. They had some ups, but they had a lot of downs in their lives, and they have that increased density, right? Now, again, I'm not saying hell when they die, but they go to a lower dimension, like dimension two.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
What does that look
yes.
like?
Okay. So,
or am I just way off?
No, not at all. So I've had experience like that. Okay. And like one of the most memorable ones was that taught me the importance of raising my vibration while I was still in this embodiment. So I would not transition in a dense, heavy form. Like was this experience. I found myself out of my body, and I was in this, what it felt like was a, almost like a convention center. Like if I could describe it, where it's like this kind of this big place, and there are lots of people milling around and people queuing in lines.
Yeah.
And I'm with, when you're in other dimensional spaces, you're never alone. So
yep.
I'm like maybe with guides or with other, whoever's helping me. And I see, I'm like, oh, wait a second. Where's that line going? I think I see a familiar face. I want to go. And they're like, no, that's not for you. That's not for you. But I have, even in this the higher dimensional space, I have free will. And so I go, I find myself like running into this line, like saying, do I know you? Like, or you look familiar. Yeah. And this line is just moving forward. And so I'm moving forward, like, you know, in this line, like not knowing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I get to this threshold and I feel myself like be pulled in, like almost like I almost like going, passing through a portal. Like I feel like there's yeah. almost like a point of no return where I get to this threshold and I can't go back. I just got to go forward. So I land in this very dense, heavy, sad space.
Okay.
And what it looked like was everything appeared to be gray. And all the beings seemed to be sad and depressed and just kind of like almost like given up, it seemed like it felt so heavy, almost like a grief,
okay.
like that feeling of heaviness. And I remember I panicked. I was like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
I can't be in here. And I was like fighting my way out of the density. Right?
Is that known as heavy body then?
Yeah, I would say it was. Yeah, it was like a heavy energy. Just like if you're feeling very, very sad.
Yep.
Or depressed, or if you're grieving heavily and you like you can't be lifted, like it's just going to take time, right, to lift you up.
Okay.
It was like that, but just imagine everyone around you in like this very tight space was like that. That was the energetic vibration of this space, of this that was the frequency that I landed in. And when I came out of it, I was so grateful that I could come back into my body. I was like, oh my God. You know, I was like, that was a close one. I almost got stuck
well,
in
see,
the sadness.
You're still alive. I want your opinion. Who were those people that you saw then? Were they dead? Were they lost spirits? Who were those people?
Yeah. So, okay. That's a very good question. When I was out of myself, I thought that everyone that I saw had an embodiment, but they had transitioned out and that they were different frequencies having different experiences,
mm-hmm.
just not on Earth. And then one time, that was my belief. I was like, oh, everybody here is even when they would see me, they would say, how are you here? You have a body. Like,
yeah.
Like people would have a recognition. Like there was something about me that was different, even though I didn't know what was different. I was like, how did you know? You know, like, how do you know? Yeah. How do you know I've got a body, you know? But they're like, they'd say, well, how did you get here? What do you, you know, you have an embodiment. Why are you here? And so when I would have those experiences, I was like, oh, they must have had embodiments and they're not, they don't have one on earth anymore. And I do, like, I am like still in my bed, you know, and I'm having this like wild experience. And so I am, one time I saw someone that I knew, like a family member, actually my aunt who I'm named after.
Wow.
And when I saw her, I almost began to cry, like in that other dimension. And I ran up and I gave her this huge hug. And what's interesting about the alternate dimensions is that everyone appears in their best version of themselves.
The higher the dimension you go, like fifth, sixth?
Yeah. And I don't know the numbers on it, but it would be just like, if there was an older person that when you see them in the ultra dimension, they look like a 25-year-old, yep. You know, like, it's like they're in the, like the best version, like maybe how they see themselves, you know, like how they feel.
From what I heard, in like certain beliefs is that it doesn't always have to be when you look the best, is back when you were the happiest in your life.
You felt your best. Exactly. Yeah. That's my version too. Cool. Or my interpretation too. Yep. So I see my aunt who is like in her 60s, but she looks like a young woman, but I recognize her. And I say, Aunt Sue, is that you? And I give her this big hug, and then we start talking, and she's telling me about her kids that were elderly, that, what, you know, like they passed on, and like telling me their whole story. And I'm like, what's happening? You know, I see someone I know.
Yeah.
And so when I came back into myself and I woke up, I literally was like weeping. I was like, did my aunt pass? And I don't know it yet.
Yeah.
And so I literally was like frantic, like trying to FaceTime her and doing all this stuff. It was like really early in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, I usually don't see people. I have seen people, but I usually don't see people who are still embodied.
Wow.
Like when I'm out. But when I had that whole thing with her, I was just like, what is that? And it was very emotional for me because it was my aunt. And so when I finally connected with her, she's like, what's going on? She goes, it was so early. I was in the shower, this and that. And I was like, you're not going to believe this. But I, the way that I said it to her, because she and I are, I'm very spiritual and she's more religious. I said, Auntie, I saw you in a dream.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that you're okay. And I just, you know, it was like I couldn't describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what needed to happen with me and her was when I was a younger child, we were very close. In fact, I'm named for her. But as I've gotten older, our relationship has become more distant. And I hadn't spoken to her in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, I need to reconnect. And so to me, it was like that experience was pushing me to reconnect while we were still living, like to make closure while we're still living.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just what it took for me to reach out to her again and to reconnect with her. And I've had other experiences with other people that are still living.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them out, and some people I've made more closure with, and others I still have some work to do.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. No, I've had, there's times where I would have dreams too, and it wouldn't be necessarily where I would like have to like connect with the person, but I always felt like, did that dream try to teach me something?
Yeah.
Was there a lesson to be taught? And I will have that like kind of cool mindset, like all day I'll be thinking about that dream. It's weird, but I'll be thinking about that dream and like, what is it trying to teach me? Or is that person in real life trying to send me a message or whatever? I mean, there's a lot of thoughts that are going through my head too. Like if we had issues in the past, are they like saying they're sorry through a dream? You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know.
Well, tell me what you think about this, Jacob. do you think that, or do you believe that when you are thinking of someone, then they're also thinking of you?
I would like to, honestly, no, but I would like to believe that they are. So I know, mm-hmm. I know that's kind of a half and half answer. When I was dreaming, did I think that person was dreaming about me at that same time? Or do they ever think about me and that issue that we had in the past that we mm-hmm. never resolved? Mm-hmm. Cause I remember this one particular dream. It was that person saying, I'm sorry, trying to give me a hug and everything. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, again, we don't talk anymore, but it's just like, okay, are they trying to say sorry too about the incident? Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. The way that I think about it is I believe that we are all connected by vibrationally, consciously. And that when we have dreams about someone that seems so real, like you said, it was a friend apologizing or trying to hug me, or me seeing my aunt mm-hmm. or other people that I think I know, the thread is long. We've been connected maybe beyond this lifetime, and that those relationships are important. Mm-hmm. Even if we don't in our physical lives, if we're not brave enough or we don't have enough courage or whatever to make closure, or to make the connection or make contact or whatever we need to do, forgive, whatever it is, that person may also be, I don't know if it's the exact same, the exact time and place and all that, mm-hmm. but that they also have you on their heart, and that from time to time, perhaps they're thinking of you. And so I do think that, I know so many times that I feel like I think of someone and I'm like, oh, I should call someone or I should send them a message. And then I get a message from them, or I go to call them and they're calling me.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, to me, I'm like, I think there's a lot more to all of it than we give credit. And there, I think we're more powerful as beings than we give ourselves credit for being.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. And I don't want to get too sidetracked, but what do you think about mediums?
Okay, so when it comes to like spiritual, like gifts, I think they're like any maybe talent that you have in the physical world.
Okay.
So I think there's as many and as varied. I like when I came into my awareness, my superpowers look like seeing auras, and okay. I could feel energy coming out of me. And so mine was a lot about energy. Like having almost like I can like know what someone's thinking, like a tap into their soul, yeah. I can communicate with the soul. And so maybe it's not what they're thinking, but what they're being, like what's going on with them. I have a very, yeah. I'm very good about that. And so I can feel insecurities and I can feel love and I can feel heartbreak. And I'm like very empathic and I can feel what's going on. And so those were what my superpowers were looking like. But other people channel, like I guess I call myself channeling energy. Some people can tap into the Akashics and they're like, oh, this is what happened in your past life 10,000 years ago. And I'm like, wow, yeah. But that wasn't, some people have remote viewing. That they have all kinds of all the clairs, and so I'm like, whatever yours is, I'm like, that's awesome.
Well, do you also feel like,
and I don't really,
it's a special thing though, because do you just think that sometimes people just don't get special gifts?
I think everybody has gifts. I think the idea is if you've unpacked yours or unwrapped yours, or some of the gifts I believe are latent within us.
Okay.
I believe our gifts are also encoded on our DNA, and that they must be awakened. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's the analogy is that of not opening your gifts, but it's not evolving interpersonally so you can awaken those latent gifts, those latent powers.
No, it just the reason I brought the medium thing, because again, I've always had a passion and interest about the afterlife and everything. So I had to check out these, like, again, I've never seen one personally. It was on Amazon Prime. All right.
Uh-huh. And,
I liked it though. I mean, it was good. It was entertaining. And the one thing that I thought that really strengthened their validity is that there was 8 mediums and they all actually said very similar things. So that's how I know, okay, they might be onto something. Cause you know how they're like different people say like things are 180 compared to the other person.
Yeah.
And say, okay, yeah. What's going on here? But no, this one dude was just mentioning, like, you know, there's like levels, there's vibrations. And when you get there, and again, he didn't really call it heaven, but when you get to those dimensions, it's kind of like you said, you can like go into any body form you want. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, again, what he says too is like, if you want to sleep, you can sleep, but you don't have to sleep. Or
right. Same with eating. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't. Well, so just think about it. That's the nutrition or whatever is for the physical. So let's say you don't have the physical, but you just have awareness, like you're just energy.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to eat corn on the cob and ice cream cones. Now, if you're in the dimensional space and there's food, you know, kind of, it doesn't, you can think you're eating it, you know, or if you want to, or you can know what that tastes like. Like it's in your soul memory.
Yeah.
But you don't have to eat anything. And it, you know, sleeping, the physical body has to rest, but does energy have to rest? You know, just think about our solar energy or our wind energy or our mm-hmm. electric energy. Does it have to sleep? No. And so it's like, there's different properties of the energetic essence of us versus the physical essence of us. And so most of what we're doing in this life is we're attending to the physical needs.
Yep.
I think when we go into our dream state, when we go into our out of body experiences, that's tending to the soul. Like we have to sleep. And like we've come to a place in society where we can 24/7 feed the body yeah. or exercise it. So it can have all the nutrition, but it still has to sleep. And it's been a conundrum as to why is that? You know, why can't we just go? Because we can just plug in and, mm-hmm. but what is it that fuels the soul? It's not nutrition, the stuff that we eat for ourselves and the body. It's something different. It's a connection with the universe, you know, or mm-hmm. the multiverse or the source of our creation. Like we have to tap into that to energize our spirit. And so when we're out of this form and we take a spirit body, no, we don't have to do all those things. But we can have, I call it the illusion of form. So we can, you know, almost like take on an embodiment. I don't know.
You
like
want to
aesthetically.
Look like, if you want to look yeah. like, say, a different person or figure even, you can
yeah,
do that.
You, right. I call them light bodies. You can take on embodiments.
Yep.
Or you can experience the alternate dimensions as a point of light, as pure consciousness, okay. like without any form, mm-hmm. you know? And so it just depends. I think people tend to take on embodiments that they're comfortable with. Same with environments. So when you're in the alternate dimensions, like what you create in your mind as a community, as a house, as whatever is what you're is relative to your comfort level.
Okay.
Yeah. And your belief systems. And so, but you can exist with none of that, with none of those, I would say, earthly comparisons. If you wish, you know, if okay. you're ready for that, if you're ready to say, oh yeah, that's just one experience. That's not the whole of it. Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm always interested too, like when you do make the transition from like physical to light and spiritual, are there guides helping you out through that process along the way?
Of course. You are never alone. You're never alone. There's just the multitudes. And so it's like, it's just kind of like, could you be on earth by yourself? No. I mean, if it comes to that, we're all gone, you know, mm-hmm. that last man or woman standing, that's Hollywood, right?
Right.
But no, you're not going to be the last person. And there's just no one, and you're just, you know, alone. And so the same thing in the spiritual dimensions.
Okay.
This is a thing that we forget, is that you are so loved. Mm-hmm. No, there's so much love for you that you couldn't possibly be alone.
Absolutely. No, and that also, it gets me to another topic too. It's kind of sad, but you know, when people, you know, commit suicide, I like to sometimes use the example that they give is like the, let's go with the mother and the son, right? So the son, let's say, commits suicide, and then the mother gets into despair. Mm-hmm. And she'll feel like she wants to commit suicide too. But what they say is, don't do that, because you're going to be more farther away than your, from your son if you do that, compared to if you just stay in your physical form.
Mm. So I don't know the whole answer to that. I tried to take my own life at one point. Mm. And I think I have a very different perception of suicide. I think that when you transition out like that, then I think the soul is in a great bit of despair, and that when we, just like we have hospitals here, there are places for the soul to heal.
Okay.
Yep. And so again, you're never alone, you know, and then there may be a lot of things to learn before you take on another embodiment, you know, like a lot of like a respite, like a little bit of a break, you know, and that you, and also when people that have very difficult transitions, like they do have very painful or frightening, you know, deaths, or very sudden, you know, things like that, or very young, you know. And so there's places for all of the souls to go, depending on how and when you transition out.
Yep.
And so again, everyone is loved, and there's a great deal of compassion. And so if you felt that you could not endure this embodiment any longer, and you took your own life, no matter which form it took, it could be euthanasia when you're old, or a cancer, it could be when you're a teenager, you know, that isn't like the circumstances. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that when you transition, that you are not alone, and that whatever this deep soulful wounds that brought you to that point, there'll be places for you to address and heal that. And there's compassion for you.
And that's the key word right there. Cause this one, a particular medium said something where, I don't know if I fully agree with, but he said suicide could be looked at in two different ways, where let's say if someone has like severe mental health disorders, like schizophrenia, schizoaffective, whatever, that's looked at very differently than compared to someone who doesn't have that. My argument is that if you get to such a state, that is, in a sense, severe mental health disorder, in my opinion. If you're such a state, like such depression, despair, that you have to take your own life, I think that's also someone in the same category, even though I kind of understand what he's saying to an extent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I really fully agree with it.
Oh, well, just think about different cultures around the world that have honor killings, and you know, women that are burned when their husbands die, and you know, there's all sorts of stuff, you know, and it's like, who are we to judge? Mm-hmm. And so I cannot speak to that, you know, like I don't believe that we're judged the way that we judge people here on earth. That's a human construct.
Yep.
But when we are spirit, and when we are loved, you know, when we are whole, I don't know if it's the same. Now, mm-hmm. what I will say is, like, let's just say I take my life and I don't complete. So like whatever I came here to do, I didn't get done.
Your contract.
Yeah. I didn't fulfill my contract.
Okay.
I exited out. And so my question would be, okay, so I didn't complete. So what now? I got to somehow complete, you know, like I don't get a pass. And I was like, oh, well, we feel sorry for you, or you were really sad. So yeah, we're just going to move you along. Like you're going to pass kindergarten.
No, you have to go back.
I think you still got to go back and go to kindergarten. Yeah.
Yep.
And so I'm like, well, let me just complete. So when I transition well, you know, like, let me do the work, like do the spiritual work. Why I have this embodiment.
Could you still fulfill your contract, but still want to go back?
Say that one more time. Still fulfill your contract, but want
let's
to
say,
go back.
Like, say I fulfill my contract, but I could like do a life review and look back and be like, wow, I still did a lot of bad things I regret. Okay, I got better and I did it, but man, I made some mistakes along the way.
Right.
You want to, again, go back to the so-called Earth School, gain more skills and get to an even higher vibration.
I think that would be between you and your spirit guides, your guardians, mm-hmm. angels, you know, you and you, your higher self. I think that contract, whatever you feel like you need to do again or redo, would be negotiated, okay. just like this contract was.
Well, it's crazy because, like, again, we're taking away the concept of like heaven and hell, but there have been some horrendous people on this earth that have done some horrendous things. Like Hitler is the main example. You think, okay, what happened to him? Did he just go through a hell of density? You know, people think that though. But really, people are like, okay, well, where did Hitler go?
Right, right. And there have been many other authoritative dictators, you know, genocide, you know, leaders, if you want to call them that, throughout history. But again, when I think about like the soul of Adolf Hitler, I still think that we are connected to him. Like he is part of the collective consciousness of humanity, mm-hmm. of the source of all. So he exists. So that energy, that thread exists. And I still believe that whatever he's had to repeat or do over, or what, you know, if he has to experience denser constructs of ideology and form in a next embodiment, I still believe that there's compassion for that soul, because I don't believe that that's how he started.
Events in his life.
Yeah, we can all figure out things that we are not proud of, and that we've, you know, we've fallen into cycles and belief systems, and even if it's not in this embodiment, there may have been some horrendous things that we have done, and then we've been given another opportunity, you know, to shift that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know the answer to people like Adolf Hitler, but I would say that he is a part of the collective, mm-hmm. and that when it comes to the source of all creation, there's still compassion for that soul, maybe hope for it, mm-hmm. To be able to somehow serve humanity in a higher way the next time around.
Yeah. And also, though, I could see millions of people choosing just to disagree with you on that due to the fact of like all the loved ones he's killed, all the people that he's mm-hmm. killed, where it's like, you want him to suffer. You want that hell for him, and you want him to suffer. You don't want him to have another chance. You don't want this and that. Mm-hmm. Like that's what he deserves. Like,
well, you know I understand mean? That feeling. I just, all I'm conceding is I don't know the answer. I think that is between him and his guardians. Yeah. Higher self, you know, to determine his next, you know, experience, his next mm-hmm. embodiment, like what he has to overcome, or perhaps atonement or karma or whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
But yeah, those are challenging ones. Those are very mm-hmm. dense souls, dense yes. energies. Yeah,
absolutely. And so another question too. So let's say there's somebody like me, right, who wants to try to learn those out of body experiences. Like you mentioned that one night, it just happened for you, right? Was there particular meditations or techniques that can help a person do what you do in a sense?
I believe so. So in my book, you may have read that I went to the Monroe Institute in mm-hmm. Virginia, and it was founded by Robert Monroe, and they teach this type of thing. So I think some of us have spontaneous out-of-body experiences. People have near-death experiences. People have, you know, meditation out-of-body experiences. Some people have dark night of the soul out-of-body experiences. Mm-hmm. And some people wish to and are seeking in that direction. And so I know Robert Monroe created the binaural beats to get to like delta, like go through the waves, different types of waves of awakening or awareness in the body, mm-hmm. the mind, to be able to lift out of the body. And there are other types of meditations that are higher frequency meditations that can help you to get out. So that it does exist. I think that each person experiences consciousness that is most aligned with their soul contract. And every experience of awakening is as individual, perhaps, as the thread of your own physical life. Mm-hmm. So even though there may be commonalities, and yes, we're all on the earth, we're all having an embodied experience, our individual lives, our individuated lives are different. You know, mm-hmm. no one walks the exact same path. And so I think that it's also true for your awakened experience. So out-of-body travel seems really attractive. Like people like say, that's so mm-hmm. cool, I want to do that. But I would say that it's just kind of like, you know, I think it'd be very cool to be in a movie, you know, but I'm not an actor, or I think it'd be right. really cool to do certain things, but it's just not my path, you know, or my way, or how I'm going to be actualized, or what I'm going to do in this life. But there are ways. Yeah. So I would look up, you know, the binaural beats, and meditative practice for out of body experience. I think there was a place, I don't even know if there still exists, but several years ago, it was called the Unexplainable Store.
Oh, wow.
And it was an online store where you could download meditations for making contact with your higher self or piercing the veil. Like they'd have things like that. I actually still have them downloaded on my phone.
Oh, nice.
So yes, I do believe it exists. And there are places that I'm sure people go to India and different, you know, places mm-hmm. of spiritual practice to do stuff like this.
Okay. And I know you've also tried Reiki too. That helps.
Yeah. So I had my first Reiki healing when I was at the Monroe Institute, and it was my first experience with energy healing. I didn't know what it was. And then I had my second healing in Atlanta when I returned home from that experience in Virginia at the Monroe Institute. And I left out of my body. The healer, you know, I didn't say anything about it. I didn't think she could tell mm-hmm. Or notice. And so I didn't mention it. And I didn't know her. And so we just, you know, I just booked her online and showed up. And when I left the body, she did notice. And she came back to me and said, she wanted to tell, she was like shaken. She was visibly shaken. And she said to me, I have to tell you something. She told me not to move. She had placed all these stones and things in my palms and my feet, which I didn't feel because I was out of myself.
Yeah.
And like literally handfuls, like of, because she was trying to ground my spirit. That was what in her understanding that she was doing, but doesn't work for me. And so I was out, came back into myself. I was aware that, you know, what she was telling me. And she said, I've been moving energy for 25 years. I've never met an energy as like yours. She said, it's ancient. And she said she thought she lost me on the table, that I died on her table. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, no, I can leave. And I was just telling her this story. And she's like, if you ever want to learn to move energy, I want to teach you, you know. And I don't know, a couple of years later, she did. And I came to her for my healing attunements because I could feel energy emanating from me, but I didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so she helped me to know how to, you know, harness the energy, like how to use it. And so I studied with her to get my master attunements.
That's phenomenal. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
Wow. So again, I have to thank you so much for again having you on my show. And another thing what I like to do is I want to know what your future dreams and goals are. Like, okay. What do you hope to accomplish in the next year or so with your program, your teachings?
Yes, thank you, Jacob. So I have created something called the Human Consciousness Consortium, and it's a conscious media company. So what I'm doing very early on with this is, you know, I'm a writer. I've written 4 books. So in the next year, I'll publish my 4th book. The idea is not just to publish my own works, but other conscious works. Once I have the appropriate funding to do so and once the business is capitalized well enough that I can take on other authors. And so I have a publishing entity. I'm an international speaker. And so again, I continue to grow my speaking engagements. I speak a lot about the consciousness of money to break cycles of generational poverty. Mm-hmm. I like to use my speaking platform to elevate humanity in that area to their own innate self-worth. I also do have I have a show called the Money Consciousness Show that I do each Wednesday on Clubhouse. Again, it's for breaking cycles of generational poverty and helping people release the patterns and cycles that have held them in generational cycles and patterns of impoverishment. My goal really, I feel like it's like a passion project of mine because I was a child of poverty, and breaking that cycle of poverty was the hardest thing that I'd ever done in this mm-hmm. lifetime. Releasing that, what I call the energy of poverty, that impoverished mindset, that impoverished soul energy. And so a lot of my work is toward what I call conscious media, the duality of being. I'm actually writing a screenplay for it to be made into a feature film. Wow. My conscious books to be made into an animated children's series, to bring about higher awareness on the planet through media. And so that's really the bigger picture. And once I have established this media company, I would like to transition to what I call the Consciousness Center, which is a place that an energetically neutral place, meaning solar, hydro, looking at how to use energy. So we leave a very low carbon footprint and actually can give energy back to the energy grid, and create a place where the highest frequency thought leaders, people that in groups that or looking at the world's problems from an elevated perspective, we come together to solve the world's most pressing issues. And this would be an entire conscious community with my vision is to have an animal sanctuary for like large elephants or large animals that have been in zoos or whatnot, that where they can come to this place just to be, just to live out their lives in harmony, grow organic foods and to really have, you know, music and arts and whatnot, but all on the realm of raising awareness on the planet. So that I believe that once, you know, those are my life goals. I believe that those things would fulfill my life contract.
And I hope you do it more than anything. And if again, you ever need any help or anything, please let me know.
Will do. Thank you so much, Jacob.
Of course. And now if any of my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there a particular website or email they could use to make contact with you?
Absolutely. You can find me and my works at www.susannicholas.org. And yes, of course, my website is the best way. And if you would like to message me, you could message me at info@susannicholas.org. And of course, I have a podcast called the Be Conscious Podcast. Take a listen to those conscious topics.
And to all my listeners, I will make sure I put the links to all those on my show notes.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, I just want to thank Susan and all of my wonderful BHI listeners for another awesome episode. Again, I just want to express that the content informed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself dealing with any type of mental health or addiction-like issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed professional counselor. All right, everyone, have a good day. Bye.